What's going on, guys? Eric Black here, Parker Miner over there. We're hanging out today. It is another episode of Rockcast. Every time I say episode, Parker, I feel like we're getting into some sort of weird
Star Trek venture
type situation. Yeah, I don't know. It's very weird and very, I don't know. We'll get into that later, I'm sure.
Captain's Log 2463.
I wonder if Captain's Log ever had like a really long poop, like if it was an actual, like if they had jokes about it.
Tootsie Roll. Price.
Anyway,
you know the extra long Tootsie Rolls they have? They're like this big.
I do. It takes me like a half an hour to eat them. Yeah. Yeah. Pretty awesome. So as tradition holds, it takes us a half an hour to introduce the actual guest on the show. But let's just do it because that's why we're really here. Yeah. The guest on the show this week, guys, it's pretty amazing. This, I don't know why. We have a thing with drummers. I don't know why. I'm not opposed to it. I don't hate it. I'm not a hater. I actually like drummers. Drums was my first love. So, but we have a thing with drummers for some reason. Anyway, the group that he's in, and I'm going to say group because you'll get it here in a second. Let's see. They have done, holy cow. Yeah. 6 studio albums.
Ooh.
Almost 7 maybe.
Wow.
They've sold more than 10 million records worldwide. That's ridiculous. I've sold 10 total.
Yep.
And they've had the most number one singles on the Billboard mainstream rock charts, apparently out of any band, which was like 16. That's a lot. That seems like a lot. Barry Kirch from Shinedown is on the show this week. Barry, how are you?
I'm good, gentlemen, but I am disappointed that I didn't get the long intro and tradition. I'm a fan of tradition, so.
Well,
we might have to cut this whole thing short.
This is good. It's been a good show. We appreciate you guys hanging out. We'll see you again next week.
Cheers.
This is Rockcast.
Yep.
That was easy, right?
That was good.
It's good to see you guys. How are you both doing?
Well, we're better now. We had some, you know, the whole 2020 situation was happening. We're doing all that stuff, getting out of that. But we're good. I think we're good. We have survivened.
That's right.
Survivened.
Survivened. You know what? It is the end of 2020. You can say whatever you want and make up words. Ooh,
sweet. I like
it. It's over.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. That's about where my brain's at now. So that seems fair and right. but the big question is, how are you? I mean, what have you been up to? What's going on in Barry's world?
First off, I'm good, happy, healthy, and so is my family. You know, it's weird for everyone, and we could all be Debbie Downers and find the dark points, I guess, of the year.
Right.
But I'm good. You know, what's been nice is spending the most time with my family that I've ever spent in the 20 years of Shinedown. So that's been cool. You know, I've got a 9-year-old daughter and a lovely wife. So that's been awesome.
That's good.
I'm an outdoorsman. So a lot of camping, things of that nature, hunting, fishing, and then, working in a drum room where I'm currently sitting in my studio playing on some tracks for friends of mine, just fun stuff. And then also, you know, the new Shinedown is being worked on. So we are currently in that process, though I'm not going to officially record here, but I'm working on some of the demos and stuff that have been sent my way by the guys and whatnot.
Nice.
And we're getting ready to kick that off because, you know what, next year for hell or high water, you'll at least get some new Shinedown music and hopefully some touring.
That's right. No, we're going to tour. We're touring. It's happening. If we have to go in a big freaking bubble.
I've got to. I think my wife is at the point now where she's like, hey, it's been cool. It's been real cool.
Get out.
Could you go on the road, please?
Let's go. We're done with you.
I'm tired of your habits. I live in Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So nice.
I'm the only member that lives here now, aside from the OGs from, you know, Jason and Brad live here still.
Yeah.
And, but just, you know, as far as the rest of the guys, they're kind of in their own hometowns. Memphis is where Zach's at. Eric's in Charleston, which is his hometown. And then Brent, he still lives out of a suitcase. Yeah. Exactly. To this day, he still lives out of a suitcase.
I'm sure he does.
He's right now, I believe he's in Knoxville visiting family where he's originally from, but he also has his son in Orlando. So he goes there a lot.
Now, when you say Jason and OG, which Jason are you referring to?
Jason Todd, the original guitar player.
Yeah, I know. I know Jason.
Yeah.
With an I.
With an I, Jason.
That's right.
Yeah, he lives, I think he's now back in Jacksonville.
I didn't realize that.
He was in Nashville for a while, and he's still, you know, playing and doing various gigs and stuff. So,
dude, Jason, man, we had a few nights together, and he ended up at my apartment that Eric actually lived at with me for a little bit after he got back from LA.
I did.
We all have pasts and histories and had good times.
Yeah, man. That's very awesome. True. You got Bobby Amaro. He's from Jacksonville, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. I believe he's still here. I think he's I mean, from what I hear, and you know, here's the funny thing is I'm home, but I never leave my house. And so I say these names and stuff. We don't hang out that much. I keep in touch with Brad, and I talk to Jason occasionally. Bobby and I never had a relationship. I'll say hi if we see each other at a gig or something like that. But sure. You know, I wouldn't say we're close by any means, but
yeah, it's like, you know, like Parker and I.
Exactly. Yeah. It's weird. You know, it's Jacksonville has such a rich history of music, but it's it's a little big world. We're the largest city landmass in the US.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's just spread out and weird, you know?
Yeah,
man.
Well, but you're having fun though. I mean, you're kind of chilling, but
you got to make the best of it. You know, you got to put the worries aside and
that's right.
Just be, you know, it gives me a time to focus on me internally instead of me as the rock star for the 90 minutes on stage. You know?
Yeah. That's how we feel about doing the show. We got to step back sometimes. we're a big deal.
Hey, man, everybody's a big deal as long as you believe it.
That's right. My mom told me that I was, and I said, you know what, Mom, you're absolutely correct. I believe that with everything that I am, I'm a huge deal. Now, if I can get everybody else to think that and understand that, I think it'd be fine. It'd be good.
As long as you listen to your mother, that's all that matters.
That's right. So you have been with the band since what? Mm-hmm. Since 2001, right? I mean, since pretty much
since the inception. Yeah. Before it was named Shinedown, I've been here. Right. I was the seventh drummer to try out for the band. They were doing auditions and stuff in Jacksonville, not to beat a dead horse, but that's kind of, I had moved up here for a job, a biology job, a very basic biology job. I'm not that smart. Moved up here for that and heard about this singer named Brent Smith who had some demos, and my brother's a radio guy. And he's like, man, I was passed this demo by this guy named Brent Smith, and I think you're going to really like his voice. He's looking for drummers. Why don't you go audition?
Yeah.
And our now Shinedown's A&R guy, Steve Robertson, who worked for Atlantic Records, was artist relations for Brent Smith. Wow. Well, so it turns out that Steve-O at the time, Steve Robertson, lived in Orlando. And the bands I played with in Orlando sometimes played gigs where he was at and we're trying to get signed, you know, and none of my bands were good enough to get signed, but he knew who I was in the fact that, oh, there's that annoying kid that keeps trying to get signed. and so, you know, lo and behold, I weasel my way into Shinedown, and I've been here ever since.
So before it was named Shinedown, it was called Barry's Band.
That's no, it was called Brent Smith's Band. Let's all get that straight.
Yes, it's weird to think of, you know, all of you guys, like, in the beginning. So as somebody looking in from the outside, it's weird to think of, you know, like your name as just a regular name. It's very hard to think that because everybody knows who you are. At least all the important people know, you know, who
that's
you
right.
are. But
like
This is all I'm saying. Thanks,
all
Mom.
That matters.
Love you, Mom.
Love you, Mom.
She's going to give us another like and another follow, so we appreciate it.
Don't think my mom won't be watching this.
I'm just saying.
Hey, Mom, subscribe.
We're all out there saying hi to you. So remember that when Christmas comes around so we can get a gift card.
That's right.
the next one, not this one that just happened. That's too late. It's too late if you didn't
Us. And we don't want to focus on it. It was a weird year.
We're done. We're done with that. We're actually going to erase that. We're going to erase that from history. So it doesn't exist anymore. Anyway. You kind of touched on this, and I had a comment. You were the seventh drummer to audition, and you said you actually moved there to do biology, something with biology. So, what was music? You were doing music at the time, right? You just needed a job,
right? So it kind of worked out. So I played I went to school for music initially down at University of Central Florida. I've played my whole life, played since I was 7 years old. Seven becomes a recurring theme in my life. So since I was 7 years old, I've played drums and I enjoyed it, but I always made a promise to my parents that I would go to school and do the thing. And I did. I didn't do it in the typical 4 years. It took me six, but we won't talk about that. Finances were difficult and I wasn't the best student. I switched majors. So I got into the music program and initially got I'm trying to consolidate a very long story. I got a scholarship to college to play in the music program by a wonderful woman named Beth Raddick, who was the percussion head at the time.
Nice.
I get the money and everything, and I'm going off to school. And then right before I go, they fire her and hire another percussion instructor because they're trying to build UCF, which is now one of the largest schools, school in Florida, but one of the largest schools in the nation, right? Mm-hmm. So they fire her because she was more of not orchestral and marching band. She was jazz, drum set, that kind of thing.
Okay. Yep.
And they let her go and bring in this guy named Jeff Moore, who's a wonderful guy and a great teacher, but he's like this marching guy. And I wasn't the guy he was looking for. So I got my first year. And then after that, it was like, hey man, you're going to be a marching guy. You're going to be an instructor. You're going to learn marimba and drum set as an afterthought. And I went,
wow,
that's dang. Not me.
Right.
Yeah, that's not me. And to this day, I still talk to him very occasionally. And I laugh and make jokes that I was his worst student because I wasn't interested in anything he wanted to do. I wanted to play drum set. Yep. So lo and behold, I ended up after the first couple of years leaving the music program. And one of my other passions is history and anthropology.
Oh, yeah.
Started my anthropology degree. And decided because UCF had a pretty good forensics program that I wanted to be a forensic anthropologist.
Ooh. Nice.
Well, with that, gave me just enough chemistry. So when I graduated and couldn't afford to go get my master's degree, I heard about this biology job in North Florida, which was basically, it was working for a company called Lake Doctors. And I don't know if you have these in your area, but Florida, because of the water table, and all the retention ponds and stuff around here, I would go and spray for feral weeds to kill them or treat the water to kill the feral weeds without killing the wildlife. So you had to test water, do these things. And you know what? To be honest, it paid shit, but it was a good job. It was a lot of fun. I had a company truck and a boat. I'd get in the boat every morning at 4 a.m. I knew where all the best fishing spots were. And you could just go out and hang out with nature. And I'm a big nature buff, so. The job was cool.
Is that marine biology?
Maybe even in the basics. Now I'm talking very basics. You know, it really wasn't education wise. Cool. There's certain people in the company now that they are, you know, the bosses were like, hey man, you got to pass these tests and these tests. But I only worked there for maybe 6 months to a year before Shinedown happened.
Yeah.
So that was the litmus to it. But that's what moved me up to Jacksonville and luck happened that.
That's cool. That
because even after leaving the music program in college, I still played and I had local bands and I played in many different bands in the Orlando area and had a lot of friends and had friends that played for Disney. And there's so many great musicians that play for the Disney World that you're surrounded by great musicians everywhere. So I learned a lot really quick.
Wow.
And I'm still learning. But that was the cool part about it. And, got up here and I was, you know, at the time, 25, have my girlfriend, fiance at the time, who is now my wife. So we were like, hey, you got to settle down, I guess. That's what you do now. We're 25. We got to settle down. We got to figure it out. And then I said, hey, I got the audition and then I'm going to LA in a few weeks. And she said, oh, really? Well, better put a ring on the finger and let's do this. And I said, you're absolutely right.
Here we go.
Wow. Dude, that's crazy, man. That's insane. So how long did it take you for them to actually confirm, okay, you have it from the time you auditioned to the time you actually were accepted?
It was pretty quick. So I was the last one to become an official member, I guess. Brent had already been working with Jason and Brad at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to the audition and initially the first audition was a meeting at Hooters of all places. And we sat around with a bucket of beer and just felt each other's personalities out, you know?
That was Jason's choice.
At that time, probably. Who knows? It could have been Brent's, too. We're talking 20 years ago, so I don't remember too well. So that happened. They said, okay, great. We kind of like your personality. Show up tomorrow with your drums, and we're going to play some songs. And wow. So my audition songs were 45 and Lacerated off the first record.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
And Lacerated wasn't a full song yet, but they were looking for somebody who could play an odd time and could play the feel. That's because that song's in, for you music heads out there, it's in 7/4, 7/8, however you want to look at it, subdivide it. And it's in an odd time. And it kind of had a, for lack of a better, and I'm not comparing the song to it because it's not my favorite song, but Lacerated is not my favorite song, but to compare to like Spoon Man, where it's an odd time, but it had a thing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So that's a horrible comparison because honestly, I don't, we all make fun of Lacerated now looking back on it.
Right.
So I played those and they're like, cool, why don't you come into the studio the next day? Cause we're starting to do demos for the record. We want you to play 45 in the studio and see if you can play in the studio. And I went, okay, sounds great. At this point, I had very little studio chops. Played it. They liked it. I'm in the band. Awesome.
Nice.
And what's cool about that, and to pull that full circle, is I'm in the band. We start working on the other songs. We end up going to LA to record with Bob Marlette. We do a grandiose version of 45 and some other songs. We ended up having to write also with Rick Beato, who's a famous YouTube guy now and a great musician. We did some of the record with him. But when it came time for the record to be done, the R&R guy, Steve Robertson, said the new 45 with Chad Orchestra and Big Ending and everything else doesn't have the same vibe. So the one you hear on Leave a Whisper is actually my demo drum recording on a broken drum set with broken cymbals and is my audition.
That is the is version awesome. You hear. That's so cool to know.
Wow.
Yeah, there's your rock trivia for the day.
That were you awesome. Were you kind of were you did you ever did you cringe at that, or was that actually acceptable to you?
Initially, I cringed.
Okay.
Initially, right. I cringed because I tend to be a little bit of a perfectionist.
Yep.
And I knew it wasn't, my drums weren't up to par at the time. You know, they had old heads on it, old cymbals, some were cracked. So I wasn't happy with it, but that's why you have people like an A&R guy or an outside voice from the label going, but it has a thing.
Right, we can make this
work. And sometimes you can't hear it because you're going, but I know I could do better. And he's like, no, it feels right. And that's what it was. It ended up being one, you know, still one of our biggest songs.
We need somebody for the show that says that. No, this is good. You should just go ahead and do this. Yeah, this is good.
You have mom. If it passes the mom test. That's true. It passes the mom test.
This is, we're going to have to hold off on this one for our Mother's Day episode, I think.
When is that, May, June?
It's something I don't know. I should probably figure that out.
We're almost there.
It doesn't matter. okay, so I I went to this website, and you might be familiar with it. It's called Wikipedia. And as you know, they're always true and accurate. But I was, I guess I kind of understand some of this, but they have described you, your genre as... There's like 18 different things here. So we're going to go over all of these things, but I'm not, maybe a few of them, but not all of them I'm sold on. So here we go. So this is Wikipedia again. They've described you as hard rock. Okay. Fair enough. I get that one. Mm-hmm. Alternative metal. Okay. Okay.
Maybe. Certain songs.
Post grunge, which I have no idea what that is.
Technically true. We came out after the grunge period.
That's right.
I guess that's pretty much okay. That's fair.
That was a thing in the early 2000s of calling bands that still had a rock thing post-grunge. And we hated it.
Whatever.
And I guarantee every band that came out around our time hated that term as well.
I'm sure it's they did.
It's so
what
dumb.
Do you mean we're post Soundgarden, but Soundgarden's still relevant? Oh,
they're still
man.
Here.
Man.
Doesn't make any sense.
God rest his soul. Bye, Chris.
That's right. That's right. Now here, okay, so alternative rock. Okay, I can, okay. Pop rock.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. The Bernie Brights of the world and Second Chance had maybe. A pop crossover thing.
Maybe.
But we're not pop rock.
That's not pushing pop. It, man. That's pushing it. Now, they do have grunge, so I can kind of like early maybe. I can kind of get that. This one, what is this called? So they say arena rock, which makes sense because you've played arenas.
100%.
So I guess we'll call that arena rock.
I'll take that.
New metal.
I'm still confused by that term as well.
Me too.
And even for metal bands, because we're not a metal band, but for metal bands, what is new metal? You know, they say, well, like, Disturbed and things like that are new metal. Well, I don't know.
Why
do we need so many categories? They're all rock and roll bands.
Okay, yeah. So that's what we're. That was the whole point of this, is getting into that and just saying, I don't understand. I mean, they got new metal, they got pop, and then they have Southern rock. Southern rock, I mean, maybe a little bit.
You did a cover of Simple Man. It's Southern rock now. Yeah,
we will always carry that sword in our back. You know, I mean, that was a devil in disguise, and that song did a lot for us.
But it did
people that do know the true story of that song know that it didn't come from, and look, we're Southern boys, you know, we're all from Florida and the Southeast and friends from Knoxville and those things. So what?
Yeah.
You know, and we're not the Allman Brothers. We're not a jam band or Skinner. You know, we're not that either. We're Shinedown. That song was done by accident and it took off. You know,
It was done well.
It was
Brent's
well.
Voice carried it well because it came from a true place. He was singing that with Jason at the time for Jason's wife and mother, who happens to be the widow of Ronnie Band's aunt. And we used to play at her club, Freebird, in Jacksonville, which no longer exists. That was our first gig. Was given to us by basically the legacy of Lynyrd Skynyrd. They would do that song. We did that song for Judy Van Zandt, which is Ronnie's widow, and Melody Van Zandt, which is his daughter, who was married to Jason, our guitar player at the time.
Oh my gosh.
And so it was a thank you to her for giving us our first gigs, right?
Yeah.
So we end up touring and we're in Boston of all places. And there's a wonderful DJ at the time there called Mistress Carrie. And she was having artists come in on the station and play covers. Acoustic covers on her station.
Dude, that's cool.
Guess what? The only cover we knew was Simple Man. As a band, and Jason and Brent played it acoustic, and she put it on air in Boston, and it took off. Yeah. The album had already been released, and that song took off because they sang it from the heart and played it from the heart.
Yep.
And we ended up having to re-release the record and put that on the record. And that helped catapult us on the first record, but it was all true. It was by accident. It was not anything aside from at the time, Brent and Jason being honest,
Yeah.
Well, and you know, you said that too. You said that it did well because it was honest, and you're dead on, man. It's if you, and that's why to me, it's so hard to, I think it'd be very hard to pick a really just an already good cover. Because you it would have to speak to you. You wouldn't have a choice, but it would have to speak to you, so that way you can not screw it up. Because the biggest thing in my world is if I do a cover of a band that I respect, and for some reason they look at it and they see it and they don't like it, then that's devastating to me. So
If you believe in that song or it means something to you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right? Exactly.
You know, so, I'm sitting in here in my drum studio some days and I'm playing along to, like, I don't know, Phil Collins, for example. I want to play it like he did, or play it my way, but hopefully if he ever heard that, which he never will, I would hope he'd enjoy and go, that kid's feeling the song. He's enjoying the song, you know?
Yeah. Well, see, that's the other side too of it. It's not just like if we're picking the song, like we have to, you know, like we just said, we have to be in it. It just has to speak to us. But on the other side of that, the person that actually performed the song or wrote the song, you know, would they, how do they feel about it? How do they feel about their song being portrayed in this? Cause you know, you see a lot of these, a lot of like weird genre mixes, like hip hop to country or to even, to even metal or, you know, to all this stuff. So the original artist, it's interesting to see and hear their take on how this new person did, this new artist, this new group, this new band, whatever it is, on how they did that song. But it's I don't know, that just intrigues me a little bit.
So. I 100% agree with that. And a lot of times you hear covers and you're like, oh, that sounds exactly like the original with a different vocal pattern. And it's like, why'd you do that? You know, did you not have enough songs to put on your record of your own?
Yep.
And that bothers me when it becomes, we're going to try to get ahead because of somebody else's song.
Yep.
Or you hear a song like, I remember, what was it, back in 98, 99 when Alien Ant Farm did a Smooth Criminal.
Smooth Criminal,
That was epic because you could tell they were a fan of that song. They made it their own, and it was cool, and the video was fun, and you know, you got, that was cool. So when you hear those things, it makes you happy and excited. And obviously that meant something to them, and it did catapult their career, but they also had a lot of other great songs. So it, you know, it's tough. And, you know, I'm not a songwriter or a lyricist. I'm a drummer.
Right.
And a proud drummer. I'm lucky to be in a band with a lyricist who is profound. And Brent writes from the heart, and everything you hear him come out of his mouth, good or bad, is real. And he's lived it, and he's seen it, or we've all lived it, and we've all seen it. Yep. And I think that's what makes him special and what makes the Shinedown's catalog so special.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's every time I listen to any of the songs, literally any of them, you can actually tell. And I'm not just saying that. I mean, I know a lot of people just say things, but that's not, I'm not just saying this. You can absolutely tell that there's been some time taken to write this in there. And it's something to where it was definitely felt. It was definitely something that, you know, that was impacted his life and, you know, or people around him or something like that. So
it's weird to watch him do it. And thank you for that. But it, you know, it's almost surreal to watch somebody like that, and frustrating to watch somebody be able to pull that out of their ass. And then you know exactly where it came from.
Yeah.
And you're like, how did you put that into such a poetic, weird way that it makes sense to the masses?
Yep.
Everybody's going to feel it. It frustrates the hell out of me every single time. And to watch him do it, sometimes, you know, it'll happen in a day. It's like, hey, I came out with this thing, and what do you think of it? Okay, that's awesome. Let's do that, you know? Or sometimes it might take him a little longer, like anybody else. I think that's a good writer.
Yeah.
But, you know, I envy those people. But I also noticed that the good writers out there are tortured souls, like Brent. You know, I think you have to have a little bit of a tortured soul or a little bit something else here that creates that thing in you.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Speaking of tortured souls, we were talking earlier about 2020. So I, you know, here's the thing. Everybody has been talking about all the negative things of 2020, and I can give you a novel of bad things in 2020. But what I want to know is, what was the best part of 2020? We kind of touched on it, where you could, you know, hang out with your family and do things like that, but is there any, do you want to expand on that? Or was there some part of 2020 that you were just like, man, this is amazing. This is okay. I'm good.
Yeah. And I think that's it. I think really being able to relearn how to be a father to my kid was important. And not that I've always tried to be a good father, and we have a great relationship, and we've always homeschooled. She's 9 now, will be 10 in January. It's a fourth grade age. We've always homeschooled her. So that she can come visit me on the road and things like that. And I do history and science with her. My wife does the math and language arts and stuff. Instead of doing it virtually like this and trying to teach her about the Constitution, I can actually be at home and do that and take a break, but then also take her fishing and do those things that I you miss, and you don't realize you miss it because the road becomes such a groundhog day. You don't realize all of a sudden you've been gone 2 months and your life hasn't changed, but theirs has completely gone crazy.
Right.
And their life, you know, I come home and I look at my daughter and go, okay, you're a foot taller and you're no longer a little girl. You're a little girl. Oh, and now you're a young woman. Those things are crazy. So to be able to enjoy that's been great. And then on top of that, to be able to focus on, I'm one of those guys, and maybe you guys can relate or maybe not, I have way too many hobbies that I want to get involved in. I'm one of those, like, okay, today I want to learn how to whittle, and tomorrow I'm going to get back in the kitchen and do that. And then this day I'm going to get back into my martial arts. And then the next day I'm going to go plant a garden. Spacey like that. So to be able to have time to actually see my garden actually flower and provide fruit and vegetables, that was cool. Never happened.
If Eric and I don't have fires to put out, it's not good. We have to stay busy.
I'm not good at sitting. My wife makes fun of me. I have two offices that they tell me. One is the kitchen, which I love to cook, and that's my second passion for real.
We're gonna get into that,
but I stand in my kitchen. I never sit down. I don't sit down. This is like the first time I've sat down today is to have this interview, just because it's a good angle and the lighting gets rid of most of the bags under my eyes.
And
then The other office is, of course, the bathroom. So that's they make we, fun of me. Those are my sitting. Two offices.
And, yeah, we're oh, sitting great. There right now.
That's nice. Where we're at.
Courtesy flush.
That's please. Right. Hang on. There we go.
I couldn't hear it. But I can't sit down. I don't sit down. I get yelled at by my folks when I go visit them. They're like, hey, come sit down with us. Like, why? Yeah. I don't want to. I'm going to just stand here and hug everybody. I don't do it well.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's I think a lot of people are realizing that they kind of need to, I mean, I hope anyway, that they need to slow down. Not like maybe literally, but mentally. We all just need to take a minute, slow down and just realize, you know, what we're doing, what we're living for, what we're, you know, all the stuff that 2020 didn't allow us to do, and just say, is it worth it? Is what I'm doing today worth it? I have a saying that I say all the time around here, 90% of the stuff that you do on a daily basis doesn't actually matter. It's just,
that's being generous.
Yeah. It's just stuff. It's just things. That you do or say or think or whatever, and it just simply doesn't matter. Not that it's bad, that's not what I'm saying, but it could stay or go. There's no real substance to it, but
it doesn't. You know, I think you have to turn internally, and I agree with you. And for me, another thing I guess I didn't realize until you made that comment is I really laid off social media for a year. I mean, if you look at my posts and my followings and things I put out there, if I put something out there, it's important. It's a charity event, or it's something for Shinedown, or it's something I really care about. But I can probably tell you, and if you look at like my Instagram or Twitter feed, I've done maybe 10 this year, maybe. Yep. And I don't look at it. And it's been cathartic. And I don't, it's been great, but you know, like you guys have a podcast. I love podcasts, and I listen to podcasts, and I watch podcasts, and I watch YouTube and do those things. But when it comes to the social media side of things, I've just stopped giving a shit.
Well,
and it feels great.
And it, dude, yes. seriously. And for those of you listening, I don't like social media at all. Parker,
I'm with you.
I just hate it. You
want to feel like a piece of shit, read your comments, and there's going to be somebody that makes you feel like you are the worst person in the world and bring you down. And I don't understand that. Why would you take the time to post on somebody else's thing to make them feel bad or tell them they suck? When you could just not look at it. It's never made sense to me.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
You know, if I see something on there I don't like, I go, next.
Yep.
Next.
Yep.
You know, it's that simple.
Well, and it's getting to the point to where, you know, it's just filled with crap. I can just I can't even go on Facebook anymore. I hardly ever go. We just deleted some of this a couple pages that we have for the show on Facebook because it doesn't do us any good.
I don't even use mine. I've had one since I was told to sign up by label and management, and I've never used it.
That's why, I mean, we share stuff to it from another source. So we actually
I share via Instagram to Twitter and to Facebook, but I never go there.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. It seriously doesn't matter. But that's the other thing too. What I was going to say is social media seems very unsocial these days. It does not seem like it is a place to hang out and be social at all because it's just so much crap, whether it's advertising or someone's opinion that doesn't
polarize the advertising, the way it pinholes into certain directions. Yeah. And I stay away from all that stuff because, you know, without being a hippie, I'm all about peace, love, and happiness and do your own thing.
Right. And
in that goes, go do your own thing, but don't tell me how to do my thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm cool with you. Go be whatever you want to be. And be prideful in that as long as you're not a horrible person doing bad things, obviously.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And let sleeping dogs lie. Let everybody be who they want to be.
Exactly. Yes, we could have a whole other show on that.
Yes, don't tangent me. Damn it.
Yes.
The battle of the beards.
That'll be hour two. So here's a thought too. I've had this since about April. If 2020, would it be a movie or would it be like a series, like a show series or something like season one, season two, season three type scenario?
I think it'd have to be a series because there's so many moving parts.
So much.
Yeah.
There's so many moving parts politically, virus, employment, jobs, restaurants, cities, blowing up, horrible crimes. It's like, you couldn't write this if you tried.
No.
Yeah. It's like Nashville. You know? We had a tornado in March. We just had a bomb.
Tornado in March, and now you had a bomb go off by some crazy dude. It's like, are you
crazy?
Do you want to keep punching me in the nuts, or can we stop?
Yeah.
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 Good Lord. Well,
and you're good. What part of Nashville do you live in? Not that you have to give it fully out because this is internet, but you're
my safe. Address is
yes, it is 117.
So Parker is on the north east. Side, and I'm on the south. Well, I guess east side.
East.
Okay.
I'm on the south side.
Okay. Good.
Something like that. So
south side.
We're about
Nashville 20. Is one of my favorite cities. That's where Shinedown Hub's out of now and has for years. So
yeah.
That's the common thing that we're hearing, man. All, you know, everybody meets up here and then they go about their business, their tours and all that stuff. And
a lot of the busing companies are there, and you have a lot of the staging companies, and you can, you know, we always get the Bridgestone Arena has the annex where we can set up our lighting and pyro and things like that. And we've been doing it. We did it before LA moved out there. It's just,
that's right.
We've been coming there for a long time.
That's nice. Right.
OGs. OGs right there. Yeah. Well, apparently LA, more of LA is coming out here. So that's good. I think some New York is coming out here as well. I don't know where you guys are going to live because we're running out of room.
There's nothing left. There's no place to go.
Well, we always have a couch open. It's all right.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough. Yeah. That'll work.
You remember when, speaking of Nashville back in the day, remember when y'all would do the riverfront shows?
Yes.
And like, man, I remember when Brent would come on stage, man, and he would have the long hair, you know. I'd be watching from the rooftop of like Graham Central Station or something. He'd come out and he would look like this with the light would always come up from underneath him, and he'd have those eyes, you know. It was just that was the good, man. I love that, man. That was some good Shinedown memories, man.
That was a different tension, you know.
It was
cool to be there and be in those moments because we weren't necessarily fully accepted at that point, you know. It was a different mission, but it was a different mission, you know what I mean?
Right. Sure. Yeah, it was,
you know, and at that time it was just, you know, it's fun. It's been a blast to watch Brent go through his stages. I love him more now than I ever have.
I would buy that season as well. The Brent.
Yeah.
That's a story for the ages.
Yeah.
It's a story for the ages.
Here's the thing, Barry. Rumor has it, and by rumor, I mean the internet. So obviously by saying that, you know it's true.
Everything on it is true.
You consider yourself, sir, a coffee and beer aficionado. Is this true?
That's true.
That's very true? Okay, well then I need to know right now what the best coffee is and what the best beer is. Ready to go.
No such thing.
Oh, fair enough.
Answered the question. Here's my philosophy on coffee and beer. Do you like it? Does it taste good to you? Drink it.
I like it. That's good.
That's the way it should be. You know, it's funny. You do the blind taste test with coffee. You do the blind taste test with beer, wine, vodkas. And then, you know, the ones that come out on top aren't always the ones that cost you $1 million.
Yeah.
It's not about the money. It's what tastes good to you. My tongue's different than yours to everybody else. For me, I prefer a little bit hoppier, bitter beers, and also very carbonated beers. I like the carbonation in a beer.
Oh, yeah.
I do. But I don't like high alcohol beers, so like the Imperial IPAs and stuff like that, where it's, okay, I'm going to drink a bottle of wine. This is 9, 10%. Yeah.
I don't like headaches.
Right. I don't want that. I don't want a nice sipping beer. My favorite beer is probably Dale's Pale Ale, because it's just good pale. And it's good, and that's very popular in Nashville now.
Yeah, yes, it is.
I've definitely spent money at the Red Door drinking Dale's Pale.
Which one? But, there's two locations, right?
We're always at the Vanderbilt one, whatever that one is. Yeah,
the OG,
making fun of the college kids.
That's right.
Before they did the expansion and after. You know, for me, it's enjoyed. And when it comes to coffee, I mean, I have my own coffee company, Spartan Brews Coffee, for those of you out there that want to check it out.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. Drink what you love. I like a very dark, rich, high octane coffee. I want to get up in the morning, drink it, go to my other office, and then have another cup.
Yep.
That's the way I do it.
Yep.
Some people want it covered in milk and sugar. That's cool too.
Ugh.
You know, whatever you want to do with your coffee is up to you.
I guess we'll allow that.
I'll allow it because it's got to be what you want. But, you know, I get weird when you got these coffee people that I've brewed it through this reverse osmosis system and it took me 12 hours to get to this fine thing. And can't you taste it?
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, it tastes like coffee.
It tastes like coffee and it cost me $10 for a shot.
We call it a nitro.
That's right.
But it's really just milk and sugar.
No, I like it. No, I like a cold nitro cold brewer. If you get a good one of those, I'm into it.
Those are good.
He's a high roller. Okay. Uh-oh. All right. Okay.
Hey, man, I was a barista in college. That's how I paid my bills. I worked in coffee shops.
You have experience. That's where it all began. Right.
That is where it all began. I worked in the, you know, like your, was it pre-Starbucks? It was a, what was it? It was like Books and Gas Money. And I worked in a couple, almost gas station. and then UCF, there was a local brewer that opened up their own coffee shop on the campus. And I was lucky enough to get there and brew good coffee times. And stuff. So it was good.
Wow. Wow. Well,
it was better than some of the other jobs I've had. So
yeah,
that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably, it's probably accurate. I can think of a few that I've had that I'd rather be a barista by far.
Yes.
But yeah. Now there was a company I was looking this up to and listen, here's the thing. Somebody gave me access to internet and I used it. So this is,
it's a research tool and I'll tell you if it's full of shit.
Okay. Fair enough. You be my fact checker. There was a company called Heavy Met Ale, mm-hmm. They are based in Sweden. They did a custom lager for Shinedown. Is this right?
They did.
Was
they
it?
Absolutely did.
How was it?
It was great. Yeah. I wish we could have continued. It was really good. So we were playing a show there and they said, hey, do you want to collaborate and do a custom ale? And they've done it, I think, for a couple of the bands in that area. And they brought it out to sample. And then they had like a kind of their version of a pre-after party with their select people and some winners and radios, their version of radio station and that kind of stuff, where they could have the beer and they're all labeled with the Shinedown logo and stuff, but they gave us a case as well to take to the bus. And I'm the only band member that drinks alcohol at all. And I only drink beer. Right. So that was a lot of fun. I had my own ale for a while and that was cool. You know, it's cool when you get to do collabs like that and have something that's unique and a one-off and especially in a foreign country. It was quite interesting and a pleasant surprise that was put together.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool, man. I think if anybody said for some reason they wanted to make anything for me, I think that would be kind of weird and awkward at first, but then I'd probably be okay with it.
Yeah, I'm glad it was good because then it would have been like, oh, thanks. You did your thing there. I'm proud of you.
Very good job. We're going to go. that's awesome. So you said earlier that you you do like to cook. You like to be in the kitchen. You like to hang out. And you, I looked at all your socials because why would I not?
Again,
it's for the show. If we don't do this, then we look stupid, and that's you don't want to be on the show. Which we look stupid anyway. But you're here. So you're essentially a part-time chef. Now, what's your favorite dish to make?
It changes over time. I think what I've become pretty good at over the years is a lot of Cajun and Creole food. That's kind of where I cut my teeth.
Really?
But I'm pretty eclectic. I like to do a lot of, I've been very much digging into cooking Thai food lately.
Trying to
learn the skill of that. And obviously I'm not Thai and I'm learning. I've got a great Thai restaurant up the street that I'm learning from because I order their food and I go, what am I missing?
Right.
Yeah.
I love food, but I love to learn about the food and experiment with it. Yes. Anybody can cook a steak with some potatoes and some veg and call it a day. And it's probably a delicious meal.
Right.
I want to go way out beside the box. I want to try, how am I going to cook a whole hog? Let's do it. Or a goat. Or how am I going to do, my father was stationed in, he's retired military, he was stationed in Turkey for 2 years.
Ooh.
And so for his birthday this past year, he's been always talking about the Turkish food and the kebabs and the sumac and this Aleppo pepper that they used to use to season their food, and how he wanted these kebabs. So I found a wonderful Middle Eastern grocer here in Jacksonville, took him there. I was like, show me the spices. He's like, I think it's this and I think it's this. And, you know, we're trying to communicate and we found what we needed. And this was pre-COVID lockdown. So this is back in February of last year, almost a year ago. And made his Turkish meal. And I found recipes and I researched and did those. That's my kind of cooking. And
what places were you going to? Well, you weren't going to like Publix or anything like that.
No, some halal Middle Eastern grocery kind of place. Almost like you'd see a bodega in New York City. It was just this, you know, off the beaten path, but they had all the cool imported legit.
I literally
spices.
Just bought these cool bowls that have like, they have like the plastic chopsticks. They're really cool. And you put the, you know, you can sit them and rest them on the bowl and you can put the tips of them in the hole. And they're huge, you know, made for like pad thai and stuff like that. And I go to Publix or something. I'm like, I don't think I can literally, even if I wanted to try, I don't think I can make a good dish of pad thai with the stuff that's here, you know? So it's hard to even in Nashville find something like that. So
yeah, and I guarantee there's a market there. You just have to, you search it out. You got to get those. There's weird ingredients with any culture, you know, that are just foreign to what we cook with, you know?
It's
like going to try, you know, I talk about cooking Cajun food, but try to find a good boudin in Florida. It's hard. You're not going to find it, you know? It's not there.
Man, the food's so good though.
It is.
For sure. For sure.
Well, I know what we're doing when we all hang out.
That's right. That's right.
We'll happily cook with and for y'all. It makes me happy. And you know, it's funny. My wife cannot cook. That's not her specialty. She is great at teaching my daughter and cleaning the house. She's wonderful at those things and has her specialties. Finances. She keeps me in check. She's great
at that.
I call her the CFO of the family. She's in charge. Hey, nice. Honey, here's the paycheck. Right. Don't talk to me. I don't know what you're doing.
Absolutely.
But she can't cook. Balance. She can't boil water. Like she asked me, my father and I were building something a while back and I said, hey, can you just mix a couple hot dogs? And then she sent the kid out to ask how to make, do you boil it? Do you grill it? I was like, you can cook it in the microwave. I don't care. It's just not her thing. So I'd lovely tease her about it. And she knows that she makes fun of herself. Right. She calls herself the queen of reheating because before I leave for tour, I will go and do cook days. I will prepackage and vacuum seal tons of food and put it in the freezer. That's and that way I know my daughter's not going to starve.
That's awesome.
That is awesome, man. That makes
I left to go hunting this past weekend, and I was only gone for 2.5 days. And as I was leaving, my daughter looked at me and said, Papa, we're gonna starve. I just laughed. He won't starve. There's food in the freezer.
Yeah.
We're good. Well, I gotta give a big shout out to our mutual friend JM John over there at Spear Talk Podcast. He's been on the show. Just an awesome dude, man. He's got a lot of. I was curious. It was one of those things where, you know, our tagline is conversations with rock stars, but one of those things, security has always been something for some reason in my mind. Like this is interesting to me. Mm-hmm. So you know when we started communicating back and forth. I really didn't think that he would even care. But he's like, yeah, man, I'd absolutely love to be on the show. And I'm like, seriously? So we had him on the show, but, man, it was very interesting to me to get the perspective of what's going on behind the scenes, what's going on when you guys are on stage or at 6 o'clock in the morning, when you roll up to the venue or when they roll up to the venue, what all has to take place in order for you guys to have a good show, in order for the audience, the fans to have a good show. And I think that's one of the things that people don't always get to hear about or see just simply because it's not one of those things. So especially in a time where, you know, 2020, it's affected everybody, literally everybody. And people have lost their jobs. People have not been able to do the things that they used to do. Again, you know, we talked about it earlier, finances are crap, things like that. In a time where, you know, maybe maybe we can give back a little bit by bringing somebody on the show that has a little bit more information about the bands that you love, the bands that go on stage, you know, day in and day out and are on the road 6 months or 3 months out of the, you know, 3 months at a time, 6 months at a time, whatever it is, just to shine light on, it's not just a band, it's a team. There is a team effort. There is sometimes 1,000 people that have to show up and make things happen, if not more, depending on the venue. So yeah. Anyway, I say all that, but he's a great guy. I really, really dig him. Really dig what
John's
he's doing.
He's great. Man. He's been a wonderful asset to us, and you're not wrong in saying that, you know, the old saying, it takes a village. It's true. You know, Shinedown. Yeah. There's four guys on stage, but how do you think that stage got put up? Those lights got put up, the pyro got put up, those t-shirts got in the front of house, that venue got put together. You got the people selling concessions. You got the local crew hanging things. You got the sound, you know, we roll luckily enough now, you know, we're 3-4 buses and 3-4 semis full of stuff. We got a staff of 40-50 people. Not to mention the locals. And they're all unemployed right now. All of them. The locals, the touring guys, and much like the restaurant industry and the servers, a majority of them live paycheck to paycheck. They go from one gig to the next gig to the next gig. Yeah, does it pay well? It sure does, but it comes at a cost, and you know, it's just the nature of the beast. It's gone, and there's no foreseeable future of it right now. You know, I don't even know when Shinedown's going to get to tour again as a whole. Yeah, Smith and Myers has been doing their thing, and that's great and awesome. It keeps the name out there, and they're having a good time. But, you know, it's Brent, Zach, John, security guy, and a couple sound guys, and that's it. Because it's easy to do, because your show can't sell the same, so we can't support a staff of 40, 50 people. And there's many artists dealing with that. And then there's the other side of things with baby bands and newer bands that – you can't do the band and trailer tour. You don't have the infrastructure, and there's no guarantee that club's going to be open for you. You can't social distance in a 200 seat club. You know, how do you make a living as a band just releasing a record? It just sucks. It's frustrating, and I feel really horrible for all of them. And I hope, you know, I hope when the, I saw a great meme today where I had this guy sitting there, and it was, you know, the last day of December, the ball's going to drop 12:59 or I'm sorry, 11:59. It's about to turn over, and then shows him in the next scene where his head's all hanging down, and it's, you know, not January, but it's month 13 of 2020. And I was like, oh my God, I hope that's not the case, you know. And we've got to get these all of our people back to doing what they do, because we all need to be entertained. I'm taking myself out of the picture. We all are starving for entertainment, and the people that put on these shows, the ones that do it for a living, really enjoy it. They really do. Our lighting, you know, our lighting guys, our techs, our drum techs, they love doing that job.
And that's the thing. Like, we, you know, we get to cover a lot of shows, so it means we get to go into the pit, you know, the photo pit, the whatever you want to call it. So we get to interact with some of these people. Sometimes we get to go backstage and do interviews, whatever it is. So we get to hang out with some of these people and just see, you know, how they go about their day, sometimes we just sit and watch, and I'm sure people are like, these dudes are weird. They're not wrong.
We are weird,
but it's interesting.
It's very interesting to us to see, because again, like, as a normal, you know, we're unique in the fact that we get to actually do some of the stuff that most people don't get to do. Just, it's the nature of our job. We're not that cool. That's just what we do. But to see past the stage, and no offense to you, but to see past the stage, to see the actual inner workings of an actual show, whether it's a venue show or an arena show or a festival show, to us, I mean, that's just as big as interviewing people like you, because we get to see what you guys do and how you get to do it on a daily basis.
It's super cool. I mean, even when my folks come to watch a show, my dad, being an engineer and the way his mind works, he'd much rather watch the crew work, and he's proud of me, but he wants to see how that thing went together. He wants to sit behind the stage and watch everybody working. Like, I didn't realize you need somebody run from there to there to do this, and this switch happened, and oh my God, how's that working? There's a motor there. There's a guy running a computer to run these lights. What's going on?
And how the hell does that guy underneath the stage in the hammock sleep?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There's always the one.
That's right. Well, and that's one of the things I loved about in 2012.
Whoa.
We're there 2012, already? What happened?
So you're telling me there's 12 of these years?
There's going to be 12 more, and I quit. Back in 2012, yeah. I had a very unique experience to cover the Grammys. And so this is a whole other conversation, but it was my first time actually interviewing not indie bands. So like celebrities and things like that. Very first time. Anyway, there was an interview we did at the Grammys at Staples Center, and it was a tech tour. So everything behind the scenes. So we were one of two media companies. The other media company was like NBC or ABC, one of the two at that time. That was the only other media company that was there. So we were behind the scenes going back through. And I, more often than not, forgot that I was the one guiding the tour. Like there was somebody telling us what's going on, but I was supposed to be the host. More often than not, I was so interested in what this person was saying that I totally forgot I actually have to talk on camera now. But it was so much fun just to see what's going on and how they do all this stuff. And you know, the dressing rooms, it was literally just locker rooms, but they made them not look like dressing rooms or not look like locker rooms at all. They made them look very elegant and very, I don't know. It was cool. It was fun for me. That video is somewhere on YouTube, I think somewhere, but anyway, that's the type of stuff that we're talking about. It's just fun. It's interesting to us to see the inner workings, the behind the scenes stuff. So,
Well, I mean, it's amazing. You know, you want the band, the people that work with, you know, we say with, some people say working for, but our core group of people that have worked with us for so long are our family. They're our road family, you know?
Yeah.
And it's cool to show up to a venue and feel like you have a little piece of home there. And they work really hard to make that happen. You know, whether it's our PA, Aaron, who she's running around on rollerblades, setting up dressing rooms and making sure everybody's happy and healthy. You know, she's the bubbly girl. And that's her. One, it's her personality. She's amazing. But two, she would be devastated if it wasn't something that made you feel good. You know? And that's the kind of people you want to surround yourself with. And that's what you want to do when you show up to another hockey arena for the fourth time that week. Yep. They all look like a hockey arena. Mm. They all smell like a hockey arena. And you're still in a locker room. You know, if she could put that one little lamp there that goes, oh, that's nice. Thanks, Aaron. Yep. You know, it still smells like hockey feet and the showers are nasty, but you know, at least it feels somewhat like home.
But that's, I mean, that's also key for your show. I mean, to have a good show, to give the show that the fans are expecting, to give the show that the fans have paid for, that stuff honestly needs to happen. Because
it matters.
It does, because again, you're on the road most of the time. You're on the road in a bus or maybe sometimes a van or an extended van or something like that for some people. And it gets redundant. You know, I did that for a short time and it is incredibly redundant, but
it's difficult. It's difficult on the psyche. You know, you got to see the world. Sometimes it was great. Most of the time, every venue looks the same.
Yeah.
So and you don't 5 days out of the week, it's the same place. What city am I in?
Yeah. Where got am it. I? Okay, cool. But yeah, you don't actually sometimes even get to see the city. You don't get to see anything but either the hotel room, the bus or the venue. That's just what you're doing. You know, sometimes you don't get a day off that week or that month. You know, sometimes. So it is a hard life for sure.
Can be. It's a blessed life. And I'm not, you know, for all you listeners out there, I'm not saying it's awesome, but it's not exactly what you see in the movies. You know, it's all glitz and glamour and look at all the fun stuff you're doing. It's still a job and it's a little bit of work out there.
It is
a lot of work.
For sure. For sure. All right, so we have a game, but I got one more question for you.
Sure.
And I noticed this today, and I've seen your socials often, but I don't know, I'd put it together today. Are you training for knighthood? I'm confused because Sir Barry Kirch Esquire, is that you're trying to be a knight?
I'm hoping that the English Parliament will knight me and the Queen will knight me, only because I think it'd be cool to actually be a sir. How that happened was I filled it out on my Amazon order as Sir Barry Kirch Esquire. So every time a package shows up at my doorstep, I feel like royalty. And And I thought it would be funny to put in my social media. So everything that shows up on my doorstep says Sir Barry Kirch Esquire.
That is awesome.
That's amazing. That is amazing.
Which I got from, for those of you that remember Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Esquire, you know, so that's kind of where it started for me. But I thought, you know, if I could be a knight, can I type it in here? And there was one time, only once, and it's been in there for a long time, but there's one time this delivery guy came up to the door and he had it was FedEx, I think. And he had to check my ID and he went, well, that doesn't say Sir Barry Kirch Esquire, it says Barry Kirch. And I said, come on, man.
Just drop it off.
He ended up giving it to me, but he was hesitant.
Wow.
He was doing his due diligence. He was doing his job.
Right. Probably his first day.
Damn, he was actually serious.
Yeah, no, he was serious. He's like, I don't know. Are you sure that's you?
Hey, Eric did something cool lately, kind of on the same level.
Kind of, yeah. So sometimes I like to give gifts, especially during Christmas. So this year I said, COVID kind of made us, how do I say this, broke? I said, well, what would be a cool gift but won't break the bank? Because I got to get one from my good friend Parker, because he's just, I have to. I don't have a choice. So I was scrolling. I was swiping right. Sometimes I would swipe left. That's a different app.
That's a different app. Yeah.
So I was looking. I was looking again.
You get to do different things with that app. Apparently.
It's a. Yeah. I forgot.
That's a different type of gift.
So it's the
it
one
keeps
that
giving.
Keep on giving.
All year round, there, Clark.
Sport protection. What I'm saying. The short version of this is Parker and I now are lords because we own some land in Scotland, and by tradition in Scotland, if you own any land. Yes. You become a lord. So we're lords. Lord.
I am fully jealous.
Yeah, right?
And why doesn't it say that when you sign into Zoom? It should say Lord Parker.
It should. It should.
If you wait until after the interview, you will hear a knock on your door and some singing telegram person will come and sing you a song about this whole situation. So just to keep your pants on.
You better not be knocking on my door.
I'm just saying, it's just wait. It's going to get weird.
Oh, look, they're behind you right now.
It's not possible.
Impossible.
Not possible. This is a bunker that looks like a room, that looks like a drummer.
That's right. That's right. I think that's everybody right now.
Yes.
We have proclamations that we own 1 square foot of Scotland.
Yeah. Yeah. So
Scotland's not that big. That's a lot of property.
Stay off my grass. Stay off my grass.
Fair enough. Or your turf or your... what do they call the swamps there? I don't.
Yeah.
What do they call moor? Stay off the moor? Yeah,
that's right. Stay more off my moor. What?
Yes.
I don't know. Anyway.
Let's play a game.
Let's do a game. Yeah. You know what, Barry? Can we do a game?
We can do a game. I can't guarantee that I'm good at the game, but I'll try my best.
Well, I think you're going to probably excel at this because it's called Would You Rather. It's really no thought process at all, because if there were thought process, I probably wouldn't be able to do it. So
that's right.
We try to do things that are in our IQ level.
And that should be this one easy this for me one, then.
Kind of there. So
I don't have a good IQ.
Now I have 4 questions for you, and you can elaborate on each of these questions, or you can just simply simply just answer them. I would do this, or I would.
Are
do
we
that.
All answering, or is it just me?
Oh, it's just you, my friend. We've already answered.
Okay. Target. Got it.
We have the answer key. So if you don't get the answers right, then we're going to have to, I'll tell you later because it's going to ruin the fun. So here we go. This is Would You Rather. The first one, would you rather use a stranger's toothbrush or wear their dirty underwear?
Dirty underwear all day long.
Ooh, okay. It doesn't really
dirty.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it doesn't really define dirty.
But yeah, you can wash that. There's no telling what's on that toothbrush. I'm actually putting that in my mouth.
You can put it, but if you can wash the underwear, you can wash the toothbrush, put it in boiling water.
You never get the option to wash.
I'm just saying, this is what I'm being told from my people. Would you rather use a stranger's toothbrush or wear their dirty underwear?
Depends how dirty. I'd go underwear just because you can put that on and you can still take a shower and you're most likely not going to get anything.
Right.
Toothbrush, you're going to get sick or something. You don't know who the person is.
Something's not. Yeah, I mean, there's just too many too many variables.
Did we get a thing, but I don't even like sharing drinks with somebody. That's just,
yeah.
Well, that's fair. Yeah, I get
what
that.
What if there's poop stains, though? Like fresh.
Like streaks? Yeah.
Yes.
You like, never said I couldn't just flip it out inside out and put it on?
That's true.
Not that it helps any, but at least makes me feel better mentally.
Yeah, that's, yeah. That will work. And first of all, why are we having to do this? Anyway, the next question, would you rather have the ability to make someone remember you or the ability to make someone forget you?
Oh, that's a double-edged sword, huh? I think remember.
Remember.
And I say that because you never want to truly be forgotten. So if you can make people remember you, that'd be great. But is it false or did you do something good? So again, going to the philosophy side of things, I don't know. You know, if you can make people forget that one time you farted on a plane next to somebody and you can just make them forget it, that's cool. I did that.
I just blame it on Eric.
That's right.
Fair enough. So maybe it'd be easier to get rid of some of the past transgressions to make them forget you. Mm-hmm. But I think to always be remembered might be more important.
So if it was you're being remembered for wearing a stranger's dirty underwear, is that still okay?
It's a story.
Okay, fair enough.
Can I be honest real quick? So no. I had COVID. We all have had it probably at some point.
Probably.
So I had COVID and obviously it affects people differently, but it did kill my smell. And I will say that at some point, I believe I was in Target. This is after. And your smell doesn't come back for weeks. Some people it's worse. Yeah, so I'm pretty sure I farted at Target. And the problem with that is you forget because you get so used to it and then you don't realize that just because you're not smelling it, the person behind you is not smelling it.
My goodness.
I regret following you.
So then maybe you do want to forget, have people forget. I don't know. But then, see, you wouldn't have that story and you just made two people laugh and probably a bunch of people that are going to be watching this laugh. So,
is this your final answer is what I'm getting to?
Final answer is to be remembered, I think.
Okay.
All right. Two more. I don't know, man. I don't know about this one. Would you rather be able to look 10 minutes into the future or 10 years into the past?
10 years into the past.
Hmm.
I had multiple concussions as a kid. And I don't remember certain areas. So I'd like to be able to look back and remember those areas.
Nice. Okay. I didn't think about that angle. I dig that. All right.
That was a good twist on that. I like that.
That was. I did not see that coming. Touche.
That's what she said.
Twice I was there. It was a really weird Tuesday.
Right.
Things happen on Tuesdays.
That's weird. Yeah. Last question. No, this is weird. I mean, just so we all know.
Because the other ones weren't.
They weren't. Okay. No. Okay.
Yeah.
Would you rather eat an ounce of someone's hair or drink an ounce of someone's urine?
I will slice, dice, and eat that hair all day long.
I don't know. I think.
You didn't say I couldn't cut it up, blend it into a smoothie. You just said I had to eat
true.
It.
No, I didn't. I did not
and,
say that.
Urine, bodily functions, again. Oh, that's like sharing a toothbrush.
But that could be more sanitary than eating hair. I know that
they
sounds
say it's
weird,
sanitary, but who's peeing in a cup?
That's true.
I am. I'm doing
I'm
it three times.
I'm not drinking any urine. I'd rather eat your hair. It looks freshly washed. Your beard is groomed. I trust the hair.
Okay.
Those beards, though, man. I'm telling you, y'all are pretty close on that length.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you've got me beat a little bit. You've got more manly dark colors, so it's fuller.
It's a jealous trick.
Well, if we, I actually used to have dreads too back in the day. Yeah. Another white dude with dreads.
Hey, it happens. These are 20 years old, my friend.
It worked, man. I dug them.
I'm not getting rid of them. You know, it's who I am. It's my signature.
Yeah, I don't think
point.
You should.
That's right.
I just it was a phase. I'm actually seriously thinking about going back to them because I do miss them. I had them for about 2 or 3 years, like twice.
Yeah. I enjoy them. My wife has them. It's a thing.
It's cool. Yeah.
Your wife had them too. She had them too, right?
She had or had or has
had.
Had.
Yeah.
So There's a, let's see, the single out right now is Atlas Falls, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That was the last one released.
That, that's a good song, man. Did you know that? Did you know that was a good song? Were you aware of that?
I thought so, especially when we recorded it. And it's funny that it was a, it was an older song that we brought back.
Really?
Yeah. I kind of wanted to unpack that, but I don't know. We're kind of running out of time, man. Do you have a minute to just kind of, just like 5 minutes talk about that?
Yeah. So, it was one of those situations where, COVID was happening.
Yep.
And, there's this, company firm, whatever, I don't know that Brent's better at explaining it, but Direct Relief, he called us and said, hey man, I want to do hook up with this Direct Relief company that's going to get medical supplies to people all over the world. I want to raise that. help raise money. And he says, you know, the song Atlas Falls that we had, we recorded it during the Amaryllis time period, and it was going to go on the record, but it didn't fit the record. But we always knew it was a good song. It was one of my favorites for that record, and it just didn't fit the record. And it was frustrating because we all looked at it and went, oh, we're going to put that away. It just didn't work. But Brent always knew it was going to rear its ugly head at some point, and it did. He's like, you know what? I think this is the song for this time and what's going on. He says, I'd like to release it. We'll do it with a T-shirt, and we'll do this whole big promo. And it wasn't even necessarily supposed to go to radio at the time. It was just going to be a digital download that comes with the T-shirt. All your money goes to Direct Relief, period.
Wow.
None of the money goes to Shinedown. We didn't make a dime off it aside for to pay for the T-shirts.
Right.
And he called each one of us, and we said, well, yeah, why wouldn't we do that? You know? I think at the end of the day, it almost raised like $1 million or something.
Wow. That's awesome.
And that's cool. If you have the opportunity to give back, you do it no matter what.
Absolutely.
And hopefully it saved some lives, you know, and then it ended up going to radio, and it did really well. And that's all along good, but that wasn't necessarily the initial attention.
Yeah.
Intention.
First time I heard it was on Octane.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Octane's always been good to us over the years. Always.
That's awesome. Man.
Between Shannon and Jose, they've always been really good to us.
Yeah. Jose.
Jose. I like him. He's a good guy.
Oh, man.
He's a good dude.
All right. Well, man, we appreciate you hanging out tonight. I know
it's my pleasure.
You've got a lot of stuff going on, and you
I don't think anybody does right now.
They do. I'd like to say that just so it makes me feel better. No, I'm important.
I'm so busy.
So many things.
I got a lot going on, but I have no problem taking time out for something like this.
Awesome, man.
We appreciate it.
Do appreciate that. Online, I'm just going to shout out your IG. They can find you everywhere else from there, but Bkirch official, is that's
correct?
That's right. Yeah, so
that is me, Bkirch official, and it goes through my Twitters and my Facebooks and all that,
and then obviously the Shinedown one as well. You can go shinedown.com. There's a lot of cool stuff. Buy their merch. They've got a lot of good merch out there right now.
We released a bunch of holiday stuff that's pretty cool, one-off rare stuff that should be fun.
Picture of my face on it.
It's a silhouette. And some people have been questioning who it is, if it's me or you with the beard, but you know, it's
fine. Yeah.
And then the other one has us both looking at each other in a silhouette situation.
That's right.
Yeah. It makes people uncomfortable. You're staring too close into my eyes. Yep.
That's why we did it. That's why we did 400,000 runs of it. It was good. It was necessary.
They sold out, I think, right?
Gangbusters.
Yeah, day one. Anyway, rock and roll. Rockcastshow.com has more information about the show. Subscribe, like, share, do all of those things because we need it. We still need you to go to our YouTube page and subscribe because we need you to. That's just a simple answer. We need you to. We don't want you to. We need you to. Atlas Falls lyric video is out as well. You can go check that out. Attention, one of the best albums, I think, of Shinedown. Not that any of the rest of them are bad, but I'm a big fan of Attention. Go find out.
I did like that one.
What's going on with that? And I'm sure that there's going to be a whole bunch of new music coming out from Shinedown soon. So be on the lookout for that. But once again, rockcastshow.com, shinedown.com. Barry, thank you so much for hanging out. And let's do it again sometime soon when it's not a fire dumpster year.
Right.
Sounds great. And I'd love to do it in person. So we actually hang out, have a toast, and
agreed.
Cook. Be social.
Cook. I want some Cajun.
I can do that.
I like it. I like it.
I can do that.
Good times.
Yes.
All right, guys. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you
cheers.
We'll see you again next time. I'm Eric. It's Parker.
Bye. Cheers.